This morning's lesson is about one of the most familiar themes in all the Bible, and I'd simply called it love one another. But I want us to possibly think about it in a way that we haven't before. So our challenge this morning is not just to think about loving one another, but just what that entails. And we'll see as we move through the lesson this morning what I'm talking about. I'd like to start with an illustration about a Russian novelist who lived back in the 50s and 60s, way back even in the 40s, named Vladimir Nabokov. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. But one summer, it said, in the 1940s, him and his family stayed with James Laughlin at Alta, Utah, where Nabokov took the opportunity to enlarge his collection of butterflies and moths. This one who's relating the story says, Nabokov's fiction has never been praised for its compassion. He was single-minded, if nothing else. One evening at dusk, he returned from his day's excursion, saying that during hot pursuit near Bear Gulch, he had heard someone groaning most pitifully down by the stream. Laughlin asked him, "Did you stop?" He said, "No, I had to get the butterfly." Well, the next day, the corpse of an aged prospector was discovered in what has been renamed in his honor, Dead Man's Gulch. While people around us are dying, how often we chase butterflies, and that's how we're going to look this morning at the idea of love and loving one another. People are dying around us, and maybe sometimes all we're doing is chasing butterflies. The point is that not taking action, not doing something, is a very dangerous place to be. The Apostle John illustrates this in 1 John chapter 3, and this will be our opening text, and I hope you read these texts with me, because they are going to illustrate what I'm talking about. Chasing butterflies. 1 John chapter 3, and we'll begin in verse let's begin in verse 17. 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. John writes this, "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth. And by this we know that we are of the truth and shall assure our hearts before Him. For if our heart condemns us, God is greater than our heart and knows all things." There was an example of someone chasing butterflies while someone's dying. See, you see this brother, he's in need, and whatever he's in need of, you have the resources to supply it. That's the context. That's the story. And what do? You shut up your heart from him. So what is it you do? You do nothing. Now, you may feel sorry for him. You may understand his need. You may know that he's in desperate need of something. But yet, what do? Nothing. Doing nothing here is wrong. Doing nothing, being inactive is sinful. And that's what the Apostle John is trying to bring across. If you have the world's goods, in other words, you have what he needs, you can supply what he needs, whatever it is. John says, take action. He had the desire, possibly, but he didn't take action. This type of person sees a need and says, "Well, that's just not right." See somebody in need. Someone needs to do something about it. Have you ever said that yourself? There's some need out there. Someone is desperate or whatever, and you say, "Someone needs to do something about it. That's not right." But all the time you had what was necessary to help them. But you chose not to do anything. So maybe that someone that needs to do something is you. So when we look at these examples and these definitions of what loving others is about, let's think about it in that sense. Let's make sure we're not chasing butterflies while someone is dying. Probably the most famous, I would say, definition of love is found in 1 Corinthians 13. I'm going to read it from the English Standard this time. 1 Corinthians 13, and this is the classic example of love. 1 Corinthians 13, and we'll begin in verse 4. 1 Corinthians 13, and we'll begin in verse 4. And we'll note here that when he defines love, he defines it both in a positive sense and in a negative sense. In other words, he tells us what it's not, and he tells us what it is. So that it's hard not to understand what Paul was talking about in 1 Corinthians 13. Listen to these definitions of love. What love is and what it isn't. Verse 4, 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient and kind. Love does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, and love never ends. Of course, the writer goes on to say that between faith, hope, and love, love is the greatest because it abides. Faith and hope, of course, will not be in heaven because there will be no point in them being in heaven. Faith and hope will have been realized, fulfilled in heaven. But love will take us through eternity. So notice what it says about love. Love suffers long, doesn't it? Love doesn't go around boasting about what it has or what it does. It's not arrogant. That's not love. People who are arrogant and proud and boastful, they're not loving. They're not showing love. Love doesn't always have to have its own way. Love isn't irritable. Love isn't constantly being irritated by what everybody does. Love isn't always resentful about people and what they have and what they do. And love definitely doesn't rejoice when people do something wrong. And it's hard being around people who do that, who are constantly rejoicing when somebody does something wrong, when somebody falls. Oh, they're so glad to see that. That's not love. Love puts up with all kinds of things. Love endures and suffers through all kinds of things. It says that's what real love is. Now, when we put that in the context of helping other people who are in need, again, we want to make sure that we're not chasing butterflies. In other words, we're not spending our time and priorities and energy and efforts on things that ultimately don't matter. See, that's what that guy was doing in our example. He was going after things that ultimately didn't matter. So what if he had a nice butterfly collection? Compared to somebody dying alongside of the road, that was trivial, wasn't it? He was chasing butterflies. But there was somebody dying, and he could have helped him. That's the point. He could have helped that guy. Love has the ability to bind all other virtues to itself. This is the point Paul makes in Colossians chapter 3. Let's read that. Colossians chapter 3. Paul says this about love. Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 12. This, of course, is right before Paul talks about how we're to teach and admonish one another when we sing. Well, the verses preceding that tell us something about the power of love. Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 12, he says, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies,
kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering, bearing with one another and forgiving one another if anyone has a complaint against another. Even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do. But above all these things, these ones he just mentioned, put on love, which is the bond of perfection. And let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which also you were called in one body, and be thankful. So notice all the things he mentioned about kindness and humility and meekness and bearing with one another and being merciful. What does he say? Make sure you put love on, because it like cements all those other things. Love acts like a glue that brings all of those other virtues together, the mercy and the compassion and the kindness and the forgiving and the long-suffering. See, it brings all those things together and binds it together. If you don't have love, then all those other things are just kind of out there. They're not all brought into one. He says love is what cements it. And you don't have that good, solid foundation if you leave love out of the picture. That's what Paul told the church at Colossae. In very similar fashion, Peter says something similar in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. He uses some of the same words, but he illustrates it a little differently. 1 Peter chapter 3, beginning in verse 8 and following. Notice how Peter says that Christians are called to be a blessing to other people. I want us to focus on that. You and I are called to be a blessing to other people. And we can fulfill that in a variety of ways. But we can't fulfill it if we spend our time chasing butterflies. That's the point. Beginning in verse 8, notice what Peter says. Finally, all of you, be of one mind, having compassion for one another. He says, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, and be courteous. Not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you are called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. For he who would love life in good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Do you hear that? You and I are called to be a blessing to other people. How do we bring that about? Well, he says how to bring it about. He says, have compassion for each other. Love each other. Have a tender heart for each other. Be courteous to each other. Don't return evil for evil. Instead, you be a blessing to other people. Be a blessing to other people. Don't go chasing butterflies. You have something far more important to be occupying your time with than chasing butterflies. Why? Because people are dying. That's why. Sometimes this means suffering with people. The writer of Hebrews mentions this as well as Peter, but notice what the Hebrew writer says about suffering with other people. Beginning in Hebrews chapter 10, and we'll start in verse 32, and notice what he says. Hebrews chapter 10, beginning in verse 32, he's reminding the people to whom he's writing about former times, things that had happened in the past. He says, beginning in verse 32, but recall the former days in which after you were illuminated, you endured a great struggle with sufferings. See, he's reminding them about the hard times they had in the past, the struggles they had in the past. Partly while you were made a spectacle, both by reproaches and tribulations, and partly while you became companions of those who were so treated. For you had compassion on me and my chains, and joyfully accepted the plundering of your goods, knowing that you have a better and an enduring possession for yourselves in heaven. Part of brotherly love is suffering with one another. Helping people through hard times. That's what he says. So again, instead of chasing butterflies, what does he say do? When you know somebody is suffering, hurting, going through difficult times, make sure you are there to help them through those times. Don't spend it chasing butterflies. People need you. So if you can, help them. That's what he says. That's how you can be a blessing to other people. You know, God throughout the Bible has given us examples of what we're talking about. These principles of what it means to really love one another and seeing someone in need to help them. And probably, if you're like me, the one that comes up before any is the one we commonly call the Good Samaritan. Luke's account gives that in Luke chapter 10. And I certainly encourage you to turn there as we're going to read about the Good Samaritan. Luke chapter 10, and it begins in verse 25. And notice how this illustrates what I'm talking about, seeing a need and fulfilling it. Seeing a need and fulfilling that need. Beginning in Luke chapter 10 and verse 25, Jesus tells this account. And behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" He said to him, "What's written in the law? What is your reading of it?" So he answered and said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." Notice Jesus' reply. "You've answered rightly. Do this and you'll live." Says, there's your answer. You want to know how to have eternal life? Love God, love your neighbor. Jesus says, go do that and you'll live. But he, wanting to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" See, his response was, "I don't want everybody to be my neighbor." That's really what he's saying, isn't it? "I don't want everybody to be my neighbor. I want my neighbor to only be a very select few people who I like to be with. That's the only ones that I want to be my neighbor." Jesus was reading his mind. Jesus knew that's what he was thinking inside. So, when he said, "Who's my neighbor?" Jesus answered and said, "I'll tell you who your neighbor is. Listen to this story. A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite, when he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And he set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, 'Take care of him. And whatever more you spend when I come again, I'll repay you.'" Here's Jesus' question. "So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" And he said, "He who showed mercy on him." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." The first two people, the priest and the Levite, did what? They went chasing butterflies. See, they were going on the road somewhere to do something. So it was more important for them to go chasing their butterflies than it was to stop and help. Now, they certainly had the resources the world needs to help. They could have done something for this man. But they chose not to. Whatever they were doing on the road, they thought was more important. Chasing butterflies. Maybe they're wanting to get home. Maybe they're wanting to go to the market. Maybe they're wanting to do this, that, or the other. But they were chasing butterflies compared to the man that was half dead. So what does Jesus say? Well, here's a Samaritan that comes along. And what does he do? He has the world's goods, and he's able to help, and it says he has compassion on him. So he was able to help, so what did he do? He helped. So Jesus' response was, who was the real neighbor? Who did the neighborly thing? Who did the loving thing? Well, the response was, the Samaritan. And that's exactly right. The Samaritan could have went on chasing butterflies like the other two. But he saw what was more important. What was more important? Helping the man who was half dead. He could have chosen to chase butterflies. But he chose the right thing. And certainly that's the point. Christ left us a great example. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul writes about Christ, describing him in the first four verses. This is what Christ did, and this is how Christ lived, and this was his attitude, and this was his mind. In Philippians chapter 2, beginning in verse 1, Paul writes, "Therefore, if there's any consolation in Christ, if any comfort of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others." In that story of the Good Samaritan, the priest and the Levite were doing what? They were just looking out for their own interest. They were not looking out for the interest of the man who was attacked. But the Samaritan was looking out not only for his interest, but for the interest of others. That's why he was the neighbor. And he was neighborly. So when it says, love your neighbor, he was loving the man who was half dead. That's being neighborly. He took action. He didn't chase butterflies. I love one of my favorite accounts in the book of Acts, is at the very end of the chapter, you remember, or the book, you remember, Paul was on a ship, had a shipwreck, you know, he was a prisoner, and the boat's all destroyed, and him and the other prisoners have found wood to float on or whatever, and they end up on an island. And that's the background. Notice the first two verses of Acts chapter 28. Acts chapter 28, verse 1. "Now when they had escaped, they then found out that the island was called Malta, and the natives showed us unusual kindness. For they kindled a fire and made us all welcome because of the rain that was falling and because of the cold." Did you see that phrase? Unusual kindness. They didn't just show them kindness. They showed them unusual kindness. They could have done what? Killed them. That would have been a normal thing to do. Kill them. But instead, they did just the opposite. They showed them unusual kindness. They showed mercy. They showed compassion. Now, that's the kind of love that God is illustrating for us. They showed unusual kindness. The very last one I want to look at shows how love is contrasted. We've defined it, we've illustrated it, and now we're going to contrast it. 1 John chapter 2, beginning in verse 9. I want us to kind of dig deep in ourselves and see about how these verses hopefully will motivate us. 1 John chapter 2, beginning in verse 9. John writes, "He who says he's in the light and hates his brother is in darkness until now. He who loves his brother abides in the light, and there's no cause for stumbling in him. But he who hates his brother is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he's going, because the darkness has blinded his eyes." Now I know for years, When I thought about the word hate, I thought about animosity, loathing, intense dislike. And while that's certainly true, maybe hate means something in addition to that in these verses. Can hate in these verses also mean indifference? Can hate also mean a lack of concern?
We may not dislike that person, but we're not concerned enough to help them. Do we only reach out to other people when it's convenient? I guess that's my point. Or if it doesn't demand too much time, or too much effort, or too much money, or too much of anything. Do we only do it when it's easy? See, the Good Samaritan, it wasn't easy for him to do that. But he knew he didn't want to waste his time chasing butterflies. There was something far more important for him to do. We need to show Christ's love any way we can. The Good Samaritan was practicing the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I think the Good Samaritan was putting himself in the shoes of the man who had been beaten, robbed, and left for half dead. I'm sure he was thinking to himself, well, what if it was me lying there half dead? Wouldn't I want someone to stop and help me? See, he was practicing the golden rule. He wasn't chasing butterflies. He was doing what was right. God's love for us should motivate us to show love for one another. It's supposed to be a sign that we're following Christ. In John chapter 13, Jesus made this clear. John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, Jesus says, a new command I give to you, that you love one another. As I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you're my disciples, if you have love for one another. He says, there's a sign right there. He says, don't claim to be my disciple. Don't claim to be a Christian. Don't claim to be following me if you don't have love for one another. Don't claim to be my disciple if you would rather be chasing butterflies instead of helping someone in need. Do not make that claim. It says, if you're going to be my disciple, then you're going to do what? The world will know that you love one another. He says, just as I have loved you. Jesus, in more than one place in the Bible, says that the greatest thing we can do for one another is lay down our lives. And that's what Jesus did. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Jesus did it voluntarily. Now our decision is, are we going to spend our lives chasing butterflies? Are we going to spend it loving one another and loving God? I want us to think about helping. I want us to think about loving. I want us to think about having compassion and mercy and kindness and not passing up opportunities if we're like that one person and have this world's goods and we're able to help. Let's be like the Good Samaritan. Let's don't be like the Levite. Let's don't be like the priest and go on chasing butterflies because people are dying. This morning there's a great invitation. The invitation is for you to come and be a disciple of Christ. Follow him, be a Christian by experiencing that new birth. Or maybe you have a desire to tell others, confess others that you've not been following Christ. And you need to do that publicly.